Toyota is seriously speeding up its plans for electric cars. The Japanese auto giant now says half its global sales will be from electrified vehicles by 2025. That's 5 years earlier than in previous targets. On Friday, it also showed off some of its early ideas on new EVs.
Britain's economy contracted sharply in April, driven by a record decline in car production. The economy shrank 0.4% early in April, the biggest drop since March 2016, and beyond analyst expectations. Manufacturing was down 3.9%, the largest decline since June 2002, while car production fell 24% on the month.
Video game fans rushing in at the opening of the E3 Expo in Los Angeles. It's the biggest event of the year for the industry, and an opportunity for gamers to get their hands on the latest gear. This year, it's all about streaming. Google's new Stadia gaming service grabbing attention. It's due to launch in November with more than 30 games. Users will pay a monthly subscription for the full service.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's June the 13th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We have put together a really good broadcast for you here on Thought Leader Thursday. Rod Murray is in from Associated Bank today. We're going to talk a little bit about some financial advice for new grads, both high school and college. Financial advice, financial planning, and maybe a little financial literacy in our first segment this morning. Rod will be with us momentarily. A little bit later in the program, Heather Longs will be with us from The Washington Post. Heather is an economics reporter and correspondent at The Washington Post. And we'll talk with Heather. We'll do a little economics check-in with her. She was actually covering a big Federal Reserve conference in Chicago that is making all kinds of news. We'll ask her a couple questions about that as well. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning in our second segment on The Opening Bell. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The markets will open today after a second straight day of losses on Wall Street. Chip stocks sent the tech sector lower as Lam Research fell 5%. VanEck Vector Semiconductor declined nearly 2%. Facebook shares fell nearly 2% amid a Wall Street Journal report that linked CEO Mark Zuckerberg with the company's privacy practices in a series of emails. Bank shares also led to the declines yesterday on Wall Street. This morning, as we look at the Associated Bank Market Desk, the futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street, with Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures up anywhere from a quarter of a percent to nearly a third. In Asia, markets are generally in the red, in Japan off by nearly a half a percent, in Hong Kong off just a fraction, in Shanghai up just a fraction. In Europe, markets are higher, in London, Germany, and France up nearly a third to a half a percent, up a half a percent in Germany. And oil in the U.S. at $52.65 a barrel, which is up about $1.51. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. First, the Treasury Department says the U.S. budget deficit is nearly 40% higher where it was last year, 40% more than it was at this point last year. The department released its review, a monthly review yesterday, showing the budget deficit is now more than $738 billion for the fiscal year. That's up $206 billion from a year ago. There's been a slight uptick in revenue to 2.3%. However, spending is up 9.3%, the deficit growing despite President Trump's tariffs, which brought in $4.9 billion in May. American consumers usually pay the cost of those tariffs in the form of higher prices for imported goods, like a tax, if you will. The Congressional Budget Office forecasts the national budget deficit will reach $1 trillion in 2022. The company Target says it will start offering same-day delivery on thousands of items for $9.99 per order through a delivery startup it purchased nearly 2 years ago. Until now, Target shoppers looking to receive same-day delivery through Shipt had to go to the startup's website, pay a $99 for an annual membership or $14 for a monthly membership. This week, Target incorporated the Shipt feature onto its website. Target says the same-day option will cover 65,000 items. Shoppers using Target's loyalty card will get a 5% discount. Also this morning, the price of oil, Brent crude, spiking more than 3% on reports of tanker explosions in the Gulf of Oman near the Iranian coastline. In the early hours of European trading, the benchmark commodity went up as much as 4% before pairing gains to trade at $61.97 a barrel. Let's begin this morning with the thought leader conversation. Rod Murray is here. He's the Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. Rod, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Got a lot to cover today. It's obviously graduation season. People are sending off their graduates from high school and college, and thought we would take a little bit of time to talk a little bit about finances. And I know you have some expertise in this matter, and there are some trends and things that we all should be aware of. But when you're a college grad and you're just starting out in the world, or even a high school grad getting ready to go to college, are you really thinking about your finances, and should that change?
Usually the answer is no, and should that change, yes. So it's certainly financial literacy is something that is probably lacking across the board, and I see a little bit of movement there doing a better job, but financial literacy should be top of mind, and it's usually not.
When we say financial literacy, what do we mean? Do you know how to add and subtract or balance a checkbook?
Right. Balance a checkbook, that would be one of them. But how credit cards work, how what your credit is, how you build your credit, how you build your credit appropriately, how you can hurt your credit, how to save money, all of those above are financial literacy.
You know, if I had a time machine and could go back and tell myself that when I was a college graduate, even a high school graduate, about credit scores and credit cards and saving for retirement, all those things, boy, would I be a rich person today.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people that share your opinion. I think that index that we read recently says that 76% say they have regrets when it comes to their finances. And of that, I think 50-plus is because of exactly what you said. They didn't start saving enough at coming out of school.
I want to go through some good tips on where to start if you're a graduate. And, you know, the best place, probably the best foundation, is to just have a budget, right?
Correct. And that's something that it can be so simple, but you have to sit down and do it. And having a budget is great, but then sticking to the budget is step two.
Sometimes you have to make a little bit of a painful decision too, right? You can't necessarily spend all the money you're making every month on fun and games. You have to be disciplined.
Right. Discipline is the key. And you know, someone gave me a piece of advice when I was coming out of school that make a budget, but the first person you should pay is yourself. And then you work with what's left and don't go above it. So, and that's the discipline part, which is harder today than I think when you and I were coming out of school, Steve, because of the availability of credit and how easy that is. And, you know, your people are on their parents' credit cards for longer. They're on their insurance for longer. So back to that financial literacy piece, it's just that that's not as accelerated as it used to be.
Yeah, I remember when I first arrived on campus when I was going to college, one of the first tables that was there was a get your credit card, and it was a $700 or $800 or $1,000 credit limit, and you're 18 years old with a credit card.
Right, plastic money. It doesn't seem real.
Does that still happen?
Oh, I that still happens, and probably even more than when we were going into college at the time.
Should the answer to that be because this is kind of a double-edged sword question? People say get your credit started early, but should we be giving kids who are 18 credit cards?
I don't know if we should be giving them. The answer is they should probably be getting a credit card, but it should have a lower limit. Mm. And that's something that, and then they should be responsible for it, understand it. And that's a discussion that, you know, a parent or an adult or a guardian is having with them on what that means. It's not just, plastic money.
A lot of this has to do with, not only how much money you're making, but how you spend it and how you save it. Things have changed a lot over the years. What is the college and high school graduate dealing with today? And I'm thinking specifically of all the digital way of transferring money.
Right. So think about how easy we just talked about a credit card is to do it. Well, you start having something that's an app that pushes money from me to you across the table here. Boy, that can't be any easier, and it's instant, and it doesn't seem real. So if you're out having dinner or having drinks with somebody or something like that, then it's just so easy to do that. Here, I'm paying you for this.
I think we're dating ourselves. The key thing to learn was how to balance your checkbook. Do people balance their checkbook still?
That's funny. I don't know. I hope so. But that's a good, back to that financial literacy piece that should be a hallmark of what you do as you're coming into it, is what does that mean? How do you balance a checkbook? And nobody has a checkbook anymore because they really don't write checks.
Yeah.
So it's balancing your ledger. And with the online piece that banking has, you know, that can be a little bit easier to do. You see what clears every single day versus doing it once a month, like when you used to have to balance a checkbook when you would get your statement.
One of the biggest piece of advice is, I think, for people, and this goes for high school graduates who are getting ready to go into college, and we've kind of covered this on the opening bell before, sort of maybe, not, I don't want to say lower your sights, but work within a budget when you're looking for schools, right? You don't want to find the most expensive school if you can't afford it and you're not getting financial aid.
Right. So those conversations should be happening, you know, earlier. Again, if the parent or parents or guardians with the students of, what are their options? How much have they saved? Or how much are they going to be responsible for it? How much can somebody help them with? You know, an idea of what financial aid means. So those conversations should be happening in high school. You know, you probably are saying, this is how much we can help you with, or how much our income is. And, you know, that's not something that somebody should go out and spread around with their friends, et cetera. Nobody else really should care. But that starts to dictate what they're going to do with college or for college and what their options are.
And then when you're a college graduate and you already have some student loan debt, how do you, as you're graduating, get ready to handle that? Is it worth making a budget specifically for your student debt?
Right. So you don't, you know, I've counseled people before on this, that the budget should hopefully be happening before you take the student loan debt on even. You don't know how much you're going to make, but at least understanding what that payment is coming out of college. So, but then once you're there and you're coming out, you know, the first thing that gets paid, you know, is that in your rent or your mortgage if you're living outside of, you know, your parents' home.
What are the consequences of not doing this the right way? What are the consequences of being bad at money and being bad at financial literacy?
So you can ruin your credit, and then you aren't able to, you know, maybe get a mortgage, get a car loan. So that's the, you know, one bad thing that could come out of it. You don't save enough so that you have for either an emergency, which we don't think that's going to happen, but we know it does. And then finally you get to the end and you look back, just like you started this call with, and saying, well, I've got to work a little bit longer because I can't afford to retire, or I certainly won't retire in the way that I think I will. Mm-hmm. And when you're 20-something, that seems like forever away. But it's something that if you think about then, it just the compounding effect of all of this, all the things we just talked about, you know, pay huge dividends.
I want to go back to the retirement aspect of this. The biggest regret among Americans, the biggest financial regret, is not saving for retirement sooner. 76% of people reported in this Bankrate Financial Security Index survey said they regretted not saving enough. That's a lot of people. How do we change? How do we bring those numbers down? How do we start people saving for retirement sooner?
So one is, it's never too late to start and to try to catch up. You know, if you say, well, I didn't do it, and so I'm too far gone, you know, that's a misnomer, and that will just put you deeper in a hole. So it you can still teach an old dog new tricks. But the way to cure that for next, you know, the next generation and the next generation is back to, I think the schools, frankly, should also be involved in financial literacy. It shouldn't just be up to the household and the parents. And that's one thing that, you know, that the banks can help with. You know, we at Associated Bank, we partner with Ladder Up, a not-for-profit in the Chicago area here. And, you know, we work on financial literacy for people. But maybe we should also be looking at financial. We also do at Associated, we do it for schools, but we do it for other people who might be disadvantaged on the financial literacy side as well. But we have a different program that we go into the schools and kind of teach them financial literacy.
And you bring up a good organization, Ladder Up. There are a couple of different groups like that, but Ladder Up's one of the good ones. And it's not if you don't qualify for one of those programs, it really isn't out of the question for somebody to say, okay, you know what? I'm 19 years old or 20 years old. I want to go meet with a financial planner. That's not something that you would be out of the question either, right?
Right. I mean, there's somebody out there to meet with everybody. And, you know, what I say is you know, tomorrow's customer is of course today's prospect. So, you know, the sooner that someone is looking at that, and there might be different levels on who's willing to meet with whom, but a little bit of digging and a little bit of checking, and there for sure is somebody will want to talk to you about your financial literacy because they see you as tomorrow's customer.
Back to the time machine that I would have, I would go back and tell myself immediately, start participating if you're offered one, a 401k, set it and forget it.
Correct. You know, that couldn't be more important, Steve. And the way to do that, in my opinion, is don't think of your paycheck when you first see that first paycheck coming in. Think of your paycheck of what the net is after the 401k. Mm-hmm. The one tough spot of that is you come out of, let's say, college, or you're getting a a new job and you have the 401k, and sometimes if it's a few months or something and you get used to that paycheck all of a sudden and you don't want to give that back, so to speak, even though you are just paying yourself. So if you can pay yourself first and say that's my income that I'm living off of, and discipline is the key, then you'll be huge dividends down the road.
Yeah, and here at WGN, we have it set here where it will automatically increase year after year without you even knowing it. So you don't even have to worry about that. I wanted to mention something else. One of the worst piece of advice that I received was to pay off my student loan debt before I started saving for retirement. I find that to be like pretty bad advice, right? Because some people were going to be in student loan debt forever.
Forever. And it should be some, lower cost debt. I think that, again, back to pay yourself first or congruent with paying off that student loan. I would not pay that off before I start saving for retirement. This should be a dual path.
Lessons learned. I think we'd be a little richer today. I want to ask, before we leave today, because this is an interesting story, and we have touched on it several times, the fintech world and regulation of some of these new companies that are coming up. I know the global banking leaders have been meeting at the G20, getting ready for the big leaders summit there, but some of the finance leaders torn on regulation for some of these organizations. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's a good word for it, torn. So it's probably some conflicting views on it. And that really is because it's still in its infancy, but it's coming so quickly. So there's the one school that says, this is coming. We need to make sure that we fill all these gaps in because when it comes, it could really destabilize the overall system if people don't have confidence in it. If there's fraud, if there's hacking that goes on that is pervasive and major enough. On the other side of things, a regulator can say or are saying, it's just not big enough yet to really be, worth our while to tackle. It's still so infancy. It wouldn't be a major impact on the overall economy. So conflicting schools of thought.
Right. And from a consumer standpoint, as a consumer, I would hope that we would see some regulation in this space because, as you well know, you and everybody at Associated Bank, you have all kinds of regulations to follow.
Right. I think, that comes back to public trust. So, think about what happened in 08 and the public trust. It took a big hit. So something in the crypto asset side of things, cryptocurrency, whatever you want to call it, that is coming. And if it's not being regulated appropriately and everyone starts using it and there's a big fraud, then public trust, once again, will take a big step back.
Well, Rod, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one conversation if they want?
Sure. People can call me at 312-544-4515, or my email is rodney.murray@associatedbank.com.
All right, thanks for coming in. We'll see you next time.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Rod Murray, Chicago Market President at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. Also, head over to associatedbank.com/thought leadership to see more of our thought leaders and to hear more conversations there.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Switching gears now to do a little bit of an economic check-in with Heather Long, economics correspondent at Washington Post. Heather's with us this morning on the phone. Heather, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Nice to chat with you again. We began our broadcast this morning talking about the new numbers on the deficit, the U.S. budget deficit, now nearly 40% over where it was at this point last year. That seems like a good place to begin with you this morning. Talk to us a little bit about budget deficits and, and why we should be concerned about them.
Well, it's not really a problem until it is, and that, what that means is that, you know, basically the United States has been running a deficit since 2001 now, and it just keeps building and building. That's how we're at $22 trillion of debt. And, you know, the theory is that at some point other countries are going, and people who buy U.S. bonds and at home and abroad are, might hit a point where they no longer want to buy U.S. debt because they begin to question whether or not the United States will be able to pay back all of this money that it's bought. We're obviously not at that point yet, but the trajectory of what the rising deficits and growing debt could look like in the coming years is very, very scary. And to put it in real terms, in 16 years, the projection is that Social Security will hit a point where we cannot pay everyone the amount that they are expecting. So that makes it very tangible and very real that many listeners of this program would be affected by that.
I know there were lots of discussions about this at the fiscal summit, the 2019 fiscal summit here in Chicago. You were a moderator in some of those conversations. How are leaders thinking about dealing with some of this?
Basically, they're not. I mean, every year they have this fiscal summit and people come in from both parties and they say that they're concerned about the deficit and that they are going to get on this and we need bipartisan solutions. And yet, what you've seen in Washington over the past decade and certainly in the past 2 years has just been more and more approval of spending and, in this case, cutting of taxes. The deficit is up 80% since President Trump took office, and there seems to be no sign of slowing. I had a chance to question the head of the House Budget Committee, John Yarmuth, from Kentucky, the Louisville, Kentucky area, as well as Republican Congressman Kevin Brady from Texas, who was one of the lead authors of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act at the end of 2017. You know, both of them talk the talk. They do understand the budget situation, but you know, we're in the midst where the White House, the Senate, and the House have to decide on a new budget by the end of September, and the overwhelming likelihood is that the, quote, compromise is going to be we're just going to spend more money than we are now.
Speaking of the fiscal summit, I wanted to get your impressions on what the headlines you thought were coming out of that. There were so many different really good discussions. What would you say was the thing that stuck out most in your mind after being there?
That the budget negotiations are not going well for 2020. And the reason that we care about that is the United States, if we don't approve and the raising of the debt ceiling, so that the debt ceiling is like this, United States is one of the only countries that has this. So after Congress approves all of the spending, says, yes, we're going to spend all this extra money, they hit a point in the year where there's this limit on how much the United States Treasury can borrow. And, you know, that all sounds good. Oh, we should have a limit on our credit cards. And why wouldn't the government want to have a limit on its borrowing? Except Congress has already said it's going to spend all this money. And suddenly we have a crisis moment in this country where the Treasury might not be able to pay all of its bills because we hit this debt ceiling. And we're supposed to hit the debt ceiling kind of late September, early October. So, you know, if we don't approve that, then again, the government may not be able to pay everyone it's supposed to be able to pay. It could be in a default situation, which is really unthinkable for the United States. But it looks like we're going to have another, you know, quote unquote crisis around that point if Democrats and Republicans in the White House and Congress can't come together.
This morning, we're again talking about trade and tariffs. The president says there's no deadline to impose more of the tariffs on China. I'm still waiting for that shoe to drop. Of course, we're still trying to figure out what happened with Mexico. That appears to be moving forward. Your thoughts on trade and tariffs this morning?
It's going to look a little bit bit better, I think, by the end of the month. More than likely, next week, we're going to hear from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve has indicated that they would reduce interest rates if it looks like the trade situation is worsening. The Wall Street Journal yesterday called the Fed the, quote, adult in the room. So you've got that kind of relief. That's why you've seen the market rally the last week. On the President Trump side, as you said, we didn't end up with tariffs on Mexico, so huge sigh of relief. I was speaking to some CEOs yesterday, Jenny Rometty, the CEO of IBM, and Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, the nation's largest bank. You know, certainly they were expressing huge relief on those Mexican tariffs. And with China, more than likely, President Trump and President Xi are expected to meet the last weekend of this month at that G20 summit that's going to happen in Osaka, Japan. Anytime they have met in the past, it's been a friendly discussion. Nobody thinks it's going to be resolved, the trade issues at that summit. But more than likely, the two leaders understand that they need to project that the talks are at least going to continue. There are going to be some handshake photos, some smiling photos. So I actually think it's going to get a little bit better in the next 2 weeks, these critical 2 weeks for the economy, thanks to the Fed and thanks to the two presidents wanting to make nice.
This morning, as we look at our screens here, our video screens, a couple of different screens of tankers on fire in the Gulf of Oman. This situation with Iran perhaps ratcheting up in terms of tension. How might this impact the economy?
I mean, it's a pretty scary situation. Geopolitical tensions continue to be one of the top worries, other than tariffs that are certainly in Wall Street investor minds and in the chief executive minds, what can happen there. I will say, though, listening to your broadcast, at the moment, yes, the oil price jumped, but it jumped and we're at $52 a barrel. It's kind of hard to remember that prior to 2015, it wasn't unusual to be at $80 a barrel or even higher, $100 a barrel in, 10 years ago. So we are still very much at historically low oil prices. As long as we stay certainly under $60 a barrel, I don't think there's going to be too much panic in the U.S. economy.
Heather, always great talking with you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Heather Long, a Washington Post economics correspondent. Make sure you follow her on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all higher by about a third this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we take a look at activity in the grain market, we have sort of overlooked what's happened to the challenge of transportation on the river systems. Basis bids for corn and soybeans shipped by barge to the Gulf Coast were steady to firm yesterday. Nearby bids at premiums to deferred shipments as shipping woes on the flooded Midwest rivers were exacerbated by more rains across the central part of the country. River flooding has disrupted barge shipping for weeks. Large sections of the Mississippi River and its tributaries closed to navigation. Exporters are relying on barge shipments from elevators along the Ohio River and on the lower Mississippi River to meet export commitments. And rains across the Midwest this week have pushed back reopening dates for several upper Mississippi River locks by several days, according to shippers. Bringing some strength to the grain market, but as I talk to more market analysts since the USDA report earlier this week, I find all of the analysts who said the big surprise in those numbers, the cutback in corn yield by 10 bushels per acre, taking it down to 166 bushels per acre. Many analysts said they can't remember that big a cut in the yield per acre number this early in the season. So we'll continue to watch that impact on the market as we trade today in both livestock and grains at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, June 13th, May's import and export prices, and the weekly report on first-time jobless claims are due today. Analysts forecast a decline of 1.3% in import prices, export prices staying flat. Numbers coming out midday on that, mid-morning. The experts see 220,000 American workers filing first-time claims for unemployment. That'll be about 4,000 more than last week. Also today, the EIA natural gas report. On the earnings calendar today, Tesco and Broadcom earnings. An OPEC report is due today. European Union industrial production numbers and German inflation data also out. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Thursday, June the 13th.